questions and comments for any of the speakers?
Hi, when you come to ABC Childcare, a question for the speech. Everything you've explained to us as it's unfolded in Australia.
Could you stand up with your question, people? Yeah.
How has it affected the standard of education for early childhood educators?
The question is, how has what has happened in Australia affected the standard of education for early childhood educators? I would say that those that are being trained and educated within one provider must be having a far lesser quality of education because they're only exposed to one form of delivery. They don't see any diversity, and I think myself that it must be not a great form of delivery. So I would expect their education is perhaps lacking. I think the rest of the system, there's still quite a strong professional grouping of academics in early childhood education in Australia who are constantly reviewing what they're doing and trying to make sure that they do provide a quality education environment and outcomes for those people who want to go into our sector. One of the very sad things about it is one of our universities had not one graduate from its early childhood school go on to work in childcare 1 year. So they're probably pretty well prepared for something else.
And how long does the course take?
There's varying, but 2, 3, 4 years. Yeah, probably much the same as yours, I suspect.
Yeah. Not that long here, but...
Yes. George, you mentioned that some of the other provinces signed this deal and had better accountability mechanisms. And I don't know about those, and maybe part of this campaign too. What should we be asking for here? And are those good enough, or you're just saying they're a bit better than what we have here?
Susan and Rita probably know the details more than I do, but it's my understanding that Saskatchewan, Manitoba signed agreements, and I'm not sure about some of the other provinces that did talk about accountability, licensing, not-for-profit care. I think we have to demand that the money is spent in accordance with the five principles of the action plan, which seem to me to be very clear, very sound, very doable, and certainly in tune with the needs of the community.
Well, we saw Manitoba was a leader, and I believe the first signer of a bilateral agreement. And the agreement with the Manitoba government was established that money would flow to the not-for-profit system only.
Expansion in the non-profit system.
In BC, what we call for is a grandparenting-type clause. To move towards the building of a community-based system. And we were really, we were excited when Manitoba signed its deal and thought this might be the way it would go. And then, as each provincial deal was signed, it seemed to be watered down more and more and more, and that's the disappointment.
But it seemed to leave the accountability. I was at this session, too. I tried to talk to Stan Hagen. The accountability seemed to be, you should read or ask your government what it's doing, or somehow the public has to take on this role, as if we don't have enough other things to do, figuring out what they've done with their money. So I'm just wondering if we should be asking for specific things. I think they're going to enshrine it in legislation and just what we can do around that.
I'm going to go to Rita and then to Matt.
Okay. So just to pick up on the point, the agreement signed to date different jurisdictions and provinces have agreed to collect data and to cooperate on that. Fundamentally, the accountability is left with the public. That is in the BC agreement. I think that wording is there, and that is what Ken Dryden at the federal level says about accountability, that governments are accountable to their public.
And yet try to find the vehicle to hold the government accountable as a public. We have had great difficulty doing that.
Manitoba's agreement is the only one that has significant outcome measures. It, for example, is the one that it will track wages and fees. So, actually not fees in Manitoba because they're set by government. But that's an example of an outcome measure related to the service delivery and improvements. And we don't have that many other agreements.
just add a couple of words. I was a bit brief in response to what I think was a very real and practical question from you, Anne. And you know, I think, I know what we can do, for instance, within the BCG or the labor movement. We're very good, I think, at organizing our members around an issue, explaining the issue, giving them a clear message, encouraging them to go to public hearings. I think we have to find a way, led by the coalition and child care workers within our communities, to organize large groups of parents if possible, but representative parents if not, to go to hearings or to go to MLAs with very clear demand, with a consistent message. And I think there's nothing wrong with demanding legislation. You're probably right that we won't get it, but we should demand it, and if we can't get it, we should at least demand a clear statement from the government that agrees to the principles, that's a benchmark against which they can then be held accountable for their actions. That's not as good as legislation, but it may be as good as we get.
What is being handed around right now is a letter that we started, or a petition, or a signing of. And while some may say that a signature is not worth much, we still believe that a signature is a voice and that it's important and that we, you know, share our voices. So we have begun collecting signatures, and we would encourage you to read and sign this today, to call on the government for fees down and wages up. We are having a board meeting on Wednesday, and so, you know, it hasn't quite been decided in our strategic plan, but shall I say that I will put forward that if you have a center that is in the Lower Mainland, and if you wish copy, I mean, you know, we just can't service the whole province by mail or for direct pickup, that if you want copies, please email us on our website. We will pay for the printing of copies for your parents or others to sign. We will get to your program and pick them up, or we will ensure that you're reimbursed for the mailing of the letters to Victoria. So please let us not have that cost about photocopying or mailing them to Victoria is a barrier. Please email us, and the coalition will do whatever we can to ensure that the voices of your families and in your community are heard. So this is one tool. The other is that I think that Sharon has lots of, or Ruth has lots of buttons. And again, I think take what you can tonight. Do we have a lot tonight? Thanks to the BCGEU. We have the posters and the buttons. So Sharon, do we have a lot tonight here?
I'm happy to distribute them as quickly.
And again, if you want more and you think that you can use more, please email us on our website and we will get you more. I think that a big action right now, because childcare is focused in the news, is to get people understanding and talking about it.
Well, I just had a comment about these funds as well, is the language around the way they're talking about this money is they're talking about it like a windfall. Yeah. They're not talking about it that this was earned money that people have been fighting for decades. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that we need to hit them really hard right now, because the money's up for grabs, and if we don't grab it, some other group is going to, that there's a lot of desperate groups in this government, and other people will take that money if we don't take it.
We lost generations of kids before. We need to stop losing the kids now. I'm going to go to Michael.
Yes,
I have a question yet.
Michael? Let me have a second.
All right, then.
I just wanted to say I had a very interesting conversation with my head supervisor around the increases to subsidies and the fact that they've now dropped the threshold, allowing 10,000 more families to access subsidy. And, you know, everybody was like, well, that's great, you know, this is going to be... And I looked at her and said, it is great, where are they going to go? We have a wait list of over a year long. Over a year. I mean, we lost 10,000 families when subsidies were cut in the first place, and that was 3 years ago. Those children are now gone and missed out, like Susan said, a generation. And now, yeah, there's 10,000 more children able to access subsidy. Where are they going to go? And nobody's willing to answer me.
Well, we know where they're going.
Well, I know
because
too.
Because we knew what happened when they cut the funding to the school age program. When they removed the cap from fees, and when they removed that funding, the kids went underground.
Yeah.
And parents went wherever they could. No training, overcrowding, no license. I mean, parents do what they need to do in order to go to work and provide food and shelter for their families. So that is where they will go. Michael. Well, that's what I
think. This is a question for our guest from down under. During your presentation, there was a great sound back here where you mentioned that some families pay up to $100 a day for child care fees. What is the, a couple of questions that I have is, what is the ratio of fees compared to grants in the system in Australia? Is it like here where parents pay 80% of the cost and the state pays 20% for grants, or is it something different?
It is something different.
Follow up afterwards.
Yeah, because it is slightly complicated, and it is, we have two ways of offsetting the cost of care. And the Commonwealth funds a fee relief system, which is based on your income. So it's the lower income gets a higher amount of money. And then we have another thing which is about to be introduced, so that the gap fee, as we call it, between what you get from the government and the cost of care. The government just made an announcement a little while ago that they will fund 30% of that gap fee, which of course will benefit the people who pay the higher fee more than the people who pay the lower fee. But there's a limit on that, up to $4,000. But it is quite, it is a little complicated. But if I just give you an example, because we've just had some adjustments. But if the fee per week of a service were the average, which is not $100 a day, but $220 per week is roughly the average, a family on $33,000, which is likely to be a single parent, would be paying $76 a week. A family on $73,000, which would be a two-parent income in some cases, would be paying $152 a week. Gives you a bit of an idea.
For a 3 to 5-year-old's fees?
We don't have quite the same system. We talk about 0 to 5. Sometimes there's a higher fee for the babies, but generally 0 to 5.
Well, obviously, wages and fees are a little
different. They are different.
They're not quite the same parallels
same.
Here. Wages are a little higher. There
yeah, wages are quite a bit higher.
Than they are here. The reason I asked that is, I didn't know whether it was primarily through a subsidy, so that the parent is subsidized via the state to pay for part or all of the fee.
Yeah.
And then there's a direct grant, if you want, which would be like our public school system. It seems to me, hearing your story, and it's the one that I've raised a few times, so some people will hear this, that in fact having parents pay any fee is to doom the system forever. That if you think of the systems that we have in Canada that are public system, the healthcare system, and while people pay private fees for dental care, etc., it doesn't cover everything. Your basic healthcare is covered gratis, unless you have an insurance fee thing that we have here in BC, but not in all provinces. If you think of the public education system, while there are now charges for supplies, etc., the fee in relationship to the cost is very, very teeny. The only one that comes close to what the child care advocates are calling for, the 20% one, would be post-secondary education, where fees account for about 20% of the total cost. And I would argue that essentially, in the long term, can only be an elitist system. And so I get concerned that while I think it's appropriate to say as a step, we got to cut the ratio from 80% to 20%, that I think inevitably where there's a fee-based system, it is so easy for government to say, we can't afford a public system, therefore we'll target through subsidies to those with the lowest incomes and leave everybody else to the marketplace. And essentially all you have, I hate to say this, I was one of those who advocated for this back in the early 70s, a market-based system that we thought would empower low-income parents, but in fact it screwed everybody.
Yeah, I mean, we would agree with you. We're a long way from having a universally accessible service while we do it this way, but
yeah, I don't think you can get there piecemeal. I mean, I think you can get there in steps, but there has to be a clear commitment.
The other thing we have, which adds weight to what you're saying, we have no cap on the fee that can be charged.
Neither do we.
So, you know, it's kind of the childcare benefit that they do get, the fee subsidy, doesn't relate at all to the fee in the first place.
That's the situation here as well.
The other thing about a subsidy system, at least that we're finding in my community, is that because it is a welfare system, it is stopping parents from trying to access the subsidy, the increase in subsidy right now, based on the horrendousness of applying in the system itself. And so no matter what the level is, if people believe that by applying, you know, they are somehow not providing for their family, it is based in a welfare system. And so people don't apply because of that. Yes.
I want to kind of pick up on the conversation about the subsidies, but also to go back to points that were made earlier in the presentations about, well, why is it that governments seem to be ignoring the evidence and pushing for for-profit childcare, despite the fact that it's not in the interests of parents and childcare workers. So I guess my question is, I'm trying to kind of get back around to the subsidy stuff, but if we talk about childcare as a right to have access to childcare, not just for as a right for children, but as also a right for parents and for women in particular, as an important part of their development, then getting to this. Into these questions about how can you make these distinctions between subsidies that distinguish between the deserving or the undeserving, and especially when we know that there are and in Grassroots Women we have done a participatory action research project which we have available if anyone's interested tonight, that's shown us that from talking to women that a lot of people just make their own they make do, and their childcare needs are met outside of the license system to a large extent. So back to the first part of my question, which is about why is it that governments align with against these interests, and instead of looking at childcare as a right. We have seen in BC a lot of cuts to the system under the Liberal government over the last 4 years. However, we also know that the system's been worsening for a long time now. And so without, I guess my question to the panelists is, how can you draw out what are the interests that are allowing governments to align with these corporate profits at the expense of people who need childcare and who need to have it considered as a human right.
It's not. It's really that part of it is all incredibly complicated and very simple. These are governments. My government in Australia is an economic rationalist government. They believe that the market does do it better. Businesses do it better. The market chooses. That's what they believe. That's it. It's as simple as that. But what a lot of the politicians say to me is that there's no votes in it. Now, why are there no votes in it? We've all been like you. I mean, I've been involved in children's services and as an advocate for 30 years, and the debates are exactly the same for 30 years. And you think, well, why? I mean, the women's movement started out with a really strong free, like around the world, free universal childcare. A lot of those women who fought then, they don't seem to be that interested in childcare now that it's not their personal issue. We have in Australia really strong conservative forces that say women should be at home with their kids. We have a lot of church organisations becoming quite powerful politically, and I think that's true in lots of places. They're anti-childcare. They think it should be the family that does it. I mean, all of those forces basically make it a struggle that we just never seem to be able to get through. And if we had the answer, we'd be there.
Well, Rita has the answer.
Oh,
well.
I just want to respond to that. I just want to say that you're being confronted with having to talk about these market forces that are driving the interests of the government. And I think that although it's difficult to add that whole other dimension to this debate, we're being forced to. I mean, the we have to talk about how the global economy is impacting.
Clearly we do, and clearly in Australia we are saying that we now have shareholder companies treating our children like commodities to make a profit out of them short term. I mean, we would not have thought that in 1991. We would have not thought that was remotely possible, which is why I'm here to tell you that it is. And before we knew it, and before you know it, that's where you'll be. Now, you can talk to conservative governments about a long-term investment versus a short-term business subsidy. They actually will consider that. But in our case in Australia, it's almost too late. You know, we now have 70% of our market like that. I mean, I know our governments have some concern about losing the entire not-for-profit sector because they express that to me. But it's very expensive for them now to take back that 70%. Now, I don't know what the minister really thinks, whether she's terrified that it might collapse. But we can talk about the failure of the market. And it's not even good capitalism, what they've done. It's not good capitalism. And you can have those arguments now because we have the evidence, but we didn't have years ago.